Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Kendrick, and joining me for this show, I've got Shane Lees.
Hello.
I've got Richard Hero Hudson.
Good evening.
And making his debut on the show, Harry Philby.
You all right, mate? How you doing? It's actually my second appearance.
Oh, your second appearance. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry for missing your debut.
No problem.
Guilty.
Good start.
I was going to do an introduction and everything, and I had an initiation quiz written out and everything. That's all scrap now.
We'll think of this like a home debut rather than the away one before.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
All right.
Oh, yeah, no. We're as bad as you, so nothing there.
Well, I got back from Morocco about a week and a half ago, and I've just had a tummy bug since, so I've lost about a half stone away.
Okay. We'll hear a bit less about your stomach, and I want to talk a bit more about United. Well, I don't really want to, but I suppose we have to, don't we?
Technique from Mo Salah, who gets in on the act. Well, that is surely Liverpool's day now.
Barnes. Oh, that's spectacular!
Eriksen tries again. Oh, that's phenomenal! Absolutely phenomenal!
Manchester City champions, and it's been decided in their favour at Old Trafford.
Well, what do you guys? I'll start with you here. Obviously, as a fellow United fan, what did you make of the performance?
First half, it was back and forth. United could have scored one or two, should have had a penalty against them as well, but going into the end of the first half, it looked good, and then the wheels fell off. And Mourinho did an outburst that I have not seen since like Benitez and Keegan levels of wow.
I actually have to agree. I think in the first half, United actually played quite well. The difference between them and Spurs is they didn't take their chances, and that's just what happens in an everyday game. So for that, when Mourinho was saying, you know, we played okay in the first half, I was proud of my players in the first half, I can actually understand that, because in that first half, anybody could have been winning that game. But in the second half, I mean, I put it in our, we have a little chat on the podcast, I put it in there, what I saw from them in the second half absolutely wasn't United at all. I mean, United were famous for their resoluteness, for being able to, if they're going behind, if they're in a difficult situation, to being turning it around. They're not famous for being like England's middle batting order, just collapsing under the first sign of pressure. One goal went in, and all of a sudden, United looked like they were going to lose that game 3-0 straight away. I never thought, after they conceded that goal from Harry Kane, they had any chance of getting even a draw, not for a second.
See, that's interesting, because I actually was watching it thinking that they were putting on quite a lot of pressure, and if it wasn't for Moura scoring a ridiculous goal, because that's the other thing about that game for me, like you said, Spurs taking their chances. It was a ridiculous header from Harry Kane. That is not an easy chance, and if he doesn't take that, I think it's a completely different game. But like you said, in the first half, I thought they were fine. So I wouldn't say like it's a massive panic. I like, just based on yesterday's performance, but obviously I'm not a United fan, so I won't feel as strongly as I imagine you two will. But
see, the thing is, I think the first goal, Harry Kane's goal, yes, it's really good from Kane, but it's incredibly weak defending.
Yeah,
I mean, Phil Jones just gets held off in that one. It's not even like it's a pushing. It's, you know, a proper fight between a centre back and a striker. He literally holds him off with one arm, pulls back, heads it in. That's it. That's as simple as it is for Kane. The second goal is defensive, pure calamity. You look at where that defensive line is. I know they've got a midfielder in the centre-backs for some reason. But that defensive line is awful. You see Chris Smalling holding up his hand saying, oh, no, what's his name? He's offside. And you got Herrera about 4 yards behind him. And that's just a total lack of awareness there. And yeah, the third goal from Lucas Moura, that is quality from him. But again, it's a case of, you know, the better sides wouldn't be conceding those kinds of goals. And I think the really worrying thing is, I mean, it was just after they conceded that first goal, they never looked like they were getting back in it. There was never a moment where you think, oh, maybe they can turn this one around. The confidence seemed shot to pieces, and the team didn't seem to rise up for challenge. And that is, for me, just the total opposite of what I've always grown up seeing what Man United are.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the confidence, I think it's more that the players just don't have the hunger at the moment under Mourinho. There's certain players there that are not playing even second gear for Mourinho now. They've lost all the desire to play for him.
To be fair, I think my big concern yesterday was like I've been a massive defender of Paul Pogba for a really long time, and people have been talking about how he would play if United freed up a bit, which they did in the first half. But I thought that was one of his worst games. Mm. I thought he had a really bad game. Same with Lukaku. And I think if those two had stepped up and actually, because Lukaku was, I love him as well, but I just didn't think that much of him in that game. Same with Pogba. But I don't know, if those two had performed, I think they could have done quite well. But
I think that goes back to what Hero just said about them not playing for Mourinho. Sometimes in a game, like this is where I think it's a bit harsh on Mourinho, because that first half, I think tactically he got it pretty much right, and it just came down to the opportunities not going that way. And as if you're let's say you're a Liverpool player or you're a City player, and you go behind because of your own defensive mistakes, the players on the pitch where you can't assign to manager, and I think that's what happened in the first goal. That's when if you really believe in your manager, you're going to go, right, come on, the manager's under a bit of pressure, we've got to play for him, we've got to try and pull him out of this. This is our responsibility on the pitch. And you know that's what would happen with Liverpool. You know that's what would happen at City. At United, they didn't, there was none of that, oh, we need to go and play and get our manager out of his trouble. It's a case of, oh, well, he'll be gone by the end of the year. I really think there was that, they don't feel like they need to play for him. Don't get me wrong, there's still the fear of Mourinho, definitely, and not wanting to be targeted by him, but there's none of that, oh, we need to get our manager out of a situation. And you look at, like, historically him with teams, especially you look at him at Chelsea, those players for the longest time played for him, apart from, obviously, in the second period of his Chelsea career, but they played for him. They would always try and pull him out because they cared about their manager, and that I didn't see that at all.
For me, the biggest issue, I think the first half, as you guys have said, that we played at least as well as Tottenham, if not maybe slightly better, despite the penalty shout. The issue for me is the first two goals came so quickly, one after the other, but immediately it was long balls up to Fellaini and Lukaku. It was the exact same reaction to when we went behind against Brighton we didn't attempt to play football, we just attempted to play hoofball. There was no, you know, the only players for me who showed any fight, Jesse Lingard tried, I thought he played well, and Luke Shaw.
Yeah, he had a really good game.
Luke Shaw was very good as well. Apart from that, the team, it was atrocious, I thought.
It's interesting you bring up the lumping it up to Fellaini, because against us, I actually thought that was your best part in the game, weirdly, when you think you can't play all this lovely football, but somehow lumping it up to Fellaini works. But yeah, anyway, Shane.
At the 40th minute mark, United had 9 shots, while Spurs had 0. That shows how well United were doing in the first half.
The thing is, though, you almost, I know how it sounds, but you almost don't want to be able to say, oh, we played well. Because it's almost worse if you say, well, we played well and we still lost 3-0 at home to a team we probably should be beating at home. It's like us last season, Southampton. We almost went down. The amount of times in games we were saying, oh, we were unlucky, we didn't take our chances, the other team did, refereeing decisions went a bit against us, or we played okay, actually. The amount of times we said that and almost went down. Because it doesn't matter at all. It's especially if you can get away with that if you're Jurgen Klopp. You can get away with that if you're Pep Guardiola, because you're not just about results in the now. You're about, we're building a team. This is for the future. This is also for the now. But we're building something, an identity, a structure. So you can get away with having the off games. You can get away with not getting results. Mourinho has always been the manager of, oh, I'm going to be a trophy winner. I'm a title winner. I will build you the squad for right now. And if he's not doing that, if you're playing well and then still losing, what have you got left with Mourinho? What have you got left as that manager then anymore? Because you're not winning. You're not winning titles. You're not competing. You're not building anything for the future. You're not bringing through the young players, and you haven't got an identity. I almost feel like we're having the England conversation. Because what do you have? Seriously.
Well, Mourinho turned around and said, well, that Ed Woodward didn't back him in the transfer window. They didn't go out and buy the defenders that they needed. But they played Spurs yesterday and lost 3-0. Who does Spurs buy in this summer?
Yeah. And as well, it's a ridiculous thing when he's saying other men, you know, oh, we didn't get back in the transfer window. They still spent, what was it, like 60 odd million, something like that. And I think if in his time he's been there, how many hundreds of millions he spent? He spent up there with the other big clubs. Yeah. The idea that, oh, we haven't, Mourinho hasn't been back in the transfer market, it's ridiculous. Woodward is right to say to him, you've got the players, go and use them. Guardiola would win the title with that Man United team. I think Klopp would probably win the title with our Man United team. Mourinho's not doing that, So you've got to say that's a mantra at that point. That's not a case of, oh, we didn't make the right signings. Sure, they could have signed more players, but how many times do you have to reinvent a bloody squad until you stop making that excuse? How many more signings does Mourinho really have to keep making before you say, I haven't got players I want? Lindelof was a player you want, and he's crap.
He spent £60 million on two centre-backs that shipped three goals to Brighton last week.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a worrying sign when your star defender can get bullied by Glenn Murray for 90 minutes.
Glenn Murray's got arthritis in both his knees.
Mate, world-class with his head and League One with his feet. That's Glenn Murray in a nutshell. But no, but I think you're right to bring up, like, that you're saying the centre-backs are the ones that he bought. But the really concerning, like, thing is, I really can't think of a single player at United that's improved over the last two or three years. And you look at the amount of Spurs players that have and the amount of City players and the Liverpool players that have, all of them look better than before their manager arrived. Even people like James Milner is having the most ridiculous season so far and had a good year last year. Like, I don't see why Mourinho, maybe he's never been the one to sort of coach players in that kind of sense, but you'd hope that at least there would be some sort of bright spark, some new talent. Like, Rashford's gone off a cliff, I think, in the last year and a half.
So Lingard about the one improvement.
Yeah,
and that was down to circumstances, wasn't it? That was down to everyone's injured, we've got to play him.
And people were always saying that he was always, like, Ferguson came out and said, I think, after he was breaking through, that he always said he was the kind of player that when he got to about 23, 24, he was going to be one of those kind of players who just sort of burst onto the scene.
Louis van Gaal's first game, he played Jesse Lingard as a winger. It was his very first game, but he gave him his debut. I don't think it's thanks to Mourinho he's the player he is today.
Yeah.
I want to move on a bit.
I just want to say one more thing. Going back to the players he's not improved, I don't think he's just not improved players. That you can forgive someone if they don't improve players who are already at peak football, you know, taking them to that next level, teaching them a way of playing that improves them a little bit or makes them work better in the system. That's what I think Guardiola and Klopp do. They're not necessarily the young player's coach, but they improve what they've already got. They make it work better in the system. I think what Mourinho's done is he's stunted players' growth, which I think is worse. You look at Rashford and Martial. If they had been in that City team when Guardiola had taken over, we'd be talking about two of the best young prospects in the world.
Yeah, Martial could be in the same vein as Sané at the moment, and he's nowhere near it.
Yeah,
they should be being talked about as, oh, could they win the Ballon d'Or by the time they're 25? That's where they should be being talked about. That's the level they came out at when they were starting at United. So for them to have gone to the point where you're looking at Rashford and thinking maybe he needs to go to someone like West Ham or Everton, and we're looking at Martial and he's trying desperately to get out of that club because he's not being played because he got replaced, well, both of them got replaced by a 32-year-old in Sanchez who has no interest in playing at all. That's ridiculous. That's not just not improving a team. That's making the future of that team worse.
Sanchez is 29, by the way. He's not quite 32.
He looks 32 these days. Plays that one.
Marshall place in the Monaco team. Kylian Mbappe. Look at him now. He is the best. Yeah.
Well, there was the tweet, weren't there? What if Mbappe played for United and Martial played for Paris? Who'd be winning the World Cup?
Martial.
Yeah. I want to ask about Mourinho's body language after the game. He applauded the fans. He had a very weird interview with Sky Sports and then the press conference. How long do you think Mourinho will be at the club, and will it be that he walks or that he's sacked?
I've got to say, I don't think he'll be sacked before a transfer window. I think it's possible he could go just before January, bring someone new then, but I don't see Man United as the kind of club that are going to sack him like halfway through the start of the season, and I don't see him getting to the last like 10 games and going, oh, let's get rid of him now. I don't think you get any real benefit from that when you're a big club. You can do that when you're a smaller club and you need a turnaround to, you know, avoid relegation. It's not going to get, if you do that at that point with a bigger club, it's not going to get you any more European football than you would have got. It's not going to get you any more of a title than you would have got. So I think he'll probably get into at least the end of the season, but I think it'll be a case of at that point a combination of walking and being pushed.
Mm-hmm. I disagree somewhat on that. United is very much a business nowadays. Well, it has been for 20 odd years, but they'll just be purely looking at what the options are, profit and loss, if how much it would cost to get rid of Mourinho versus how much they would lose through revenue, through both Europe and through sponsorship.
You think they'd get rid of him after, say, six or seven games?
Possibly. There's clearly rumours about Zidane at the moment. If he's available, you know, he's a the biggest global name about to, as a manager to get at the moment. He'd probably steady the ship with both Pogba and Martial, please them. I could see them having a go for Zidane.
I think Zidane's quite a likely one, but I think he'll be a Van Gaal-esque departure. Everyone knows it's coming, but they're still going to wait and see it out, because as I said, I don't think for a big club there's any real value in doing it. You've got to even do it so early that you've still got the entire season ahead of you, and I don't see Man United pulling the trigger this early. I really don't. Or you do it maybe the last couple of games to give, you know, a bit like with Giggs and Moyes, so you give someone the last couple of things so that a season can be ended on a bit more of a positive note. But I can't really see them making that change, you know, 7 games into season, 10 games into season, 25 games into season. I really don't see that, because you don't see any big clubs doing it. You don't see any of the big clubs doing that.
I think it will also depend on United's plan to bring in a director of football. I think depending on who they choose to bring in, I think that will probably coincide with like a decision about Mourinho. Because if they bring in somebody who, you know, Mourinho can work with, which is probably unlikely to be honest, because he's quite difficult to work with at the moment. But you know, I think that will probably coincide with whatever happens with Mourinho. But I think I agree with Shane. I think he'll probably get to the end of the season.
I think he'll get fed up and just walk, November or something if things don't improve. I think perhaps last night I was pretty peeved at the game, but I think I maybe overreacted, which brings me on quite nicely to my next point.
I think that's kind of wishful thinking.
Well, maybe. But what I do want to ask is Tottenham and focus on them a little bit, because it's easy to overlook, but we've called Tottenham bottlers for a long time, and going to Old Trafford and picking up a 3-0 win, are they genuine title contenders?
No.
I think it's easier for them not to be bottlers when we're still in August.
The thing is, Tottenham have started the last couple of seasons quite well, and they always seem to end the season in the exact same kind of way. I think because it's still basically the exact same team, and at the end of this year, there could be a lot of different jobs up for Pochettino potentially get. You can see it very realistically, Real Madrid sacking a manager after 1 year. Man United will be very, very much a possible position. I don't know. As much as this Tottenham side are still looking good, they're still looking exactly like they are as good as they are. They've got Dele Alli, who is statistically one of the best midfielders in the league. They've got Harry Kane, who is probably the best striker in the league, if not one of the best strikers in the world. I still don't see if they've got enough to actually put together a title challenge. Not proper squad depth. You look at Liverpool, I think they've got squad depth now. City have got the squad depth. Even Chelsea, I think, are going to put something together this season. That'll be maybe not as quite as close to City as Liverpool will get, or one of the other way around. But I think they'll still be in it for the most part of the season. I look at Tottenham now and you think, how many players have they got? If things are going bad, if plan A is going wrong, how many players have they got they can bring on for plan B? One or two injuries to that team and they start to really struggle, and as the season picks up and Europe comes into play, I can't see how much more they can put together.
If they lose Davidson, the big loss for them, I think.
Well, and Kane. And Kane hasn't quite looked the same since the injury last season.
Kane's had patches out over the last couple of years, and they've usually done all right when he's been out.
Well, they play Son up front, don't they? Or probably Lucas Moura is probably what they'd do. Well, Son's away at the minute, isn't he, on international duty as well?
On national service afterwards.
Yeah.
the thing is, the key way to look at it is, if you're going to win the title this season, you probably need 90-plus points. Who here is realistically going to see Tottenham getting 90-plus points? That's as simple as it comes down to. It's like you look at the teams at the bottom and you go, can they realistically get about 38, 40 points? And you go, no, of course they can't. Where are they going to pick up all those wins from? It's the exact same thing at the top. I can see City doing that. I can see Liverpool doing that. I could see at an outside chance Chelsea doing that. I can't see Tottenham or United coincidentally doing that. I can't see them getting close.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough.
I'd be happy with 50 points this year for United.
So if you were picking the top four today, would you all agree with City, Tottenham, Liverpool and Chelsea, or any dispute?
Yeah, but just City, Liverpool, probably Chelsea, Tottenham, as in that order, I think.
Same.
Yeah.
All right, good. No debate there.
It's going to be a boring season, boys.
I was hoping
depends how fast Mourinho goes. Mourinho, we're still with the show.
Hey, don't forget Watford are challenging.
I was just going to come on to Watford. They've had a perfect record so far with the 3 wins. A lot of people were one of the favourites to get relegated before, but they've had a very strong start to the season.
When was the last time they had a bad start to the season, though? They sort of hit about 30 points and go, yeah, we're pretty much good for the rest of the season now. Let's just pick up the odd draw, the odd win here or there, and be done with it. You never know with a team like Watford. They're going to do anything this year, aren't they? They're either going to go and be like competing for Europe, or they're going to finish 17th or something. I don't think they'll be in any danger of really getting relegated, though.
Okay. Burnley are a team in possible danger of getting relegated. I know it's only 3 games in, but they're distracted by the European football. Good luck to them on Thursday, by the way, and against Olympiakos in the second leg, the 3-1 down. But they've lost one and drew the other. Lost two and drawn the other one. Do you think Burnley will be all right, or do you think they might actually end up in a relegation scrap?
I mean, I personally think they'll be fine, just from what I saw from them against us. I watched that game, I thought they were very assured, very calm, very composed. It's got to remember, this is like the first time they've been in Europe for what, like 30, 40 years? None of the players or coaches or any of them have experience of this. It's going to take them time to settle. Maybe they won't get European football again, but I still think they'll be just fine because they are a class above all the teams around them. And you know that you can tell in that team when you see them, when you watch them playing, they don't think they're as bad as the results have gone. And that's the key thing. When a team starts to think, oh, God, we can't beat this team in front of us, Burnley are going into games thinking they could beat the teams around them. They're playing that way as well. They've been a bit unfortunate, and they've come against teams who have been decent on their day. We were defensively decent against them. Fulham were free scoring on that day. Now, I don't think that has anything really to do with Burnley's defence. So I think they'll be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think going to the point of, like you always say with relegated sides, is like, are there 3 teams worse than them? And really, there are about 6 teams that are definitely worse than them in terms of the way they've performed over the last few years. Like, I don't think they'll be. I don't think they'll be near the Europe spots like they were last year. But I think they'll probably end up finishing 10th, 11th, something like that, quite comfortable in the end.
But for now, you think they're doing the right thing in prioritising Europe, putting everything into trying to get into the Europa League group stages?
Yeah, I think so. It's the only time you're ever going to get... It's realistically the only time they're going to get a chance to do it. So you've got to go all out on it while you can and then pick up the points the rest of the season when you need to. Because I think he's been saying all the right things. Like, we always talk about with Europe when managers complain about, oh, there's too many games and we can't play enough. That's mainly around Christmas time. But Deitch has just come out and said, no, we've got a good squad of players. They're fit, they can play, and they're going to enjoy it. And they seem to be. So I think they'll be fine.
You've got to remember as well, this is Burnley. This isn't. They're not going to have the big club worries and all of that lot. They want to take their fans on a European tour. What's the point in finishing 7th last season if you go out in the knockouts this season? If you say, yeah, we don't really want to be in it because of all the extra games. What's the point in every single season? Otherwise, unless you win something, it's all pointless. It's all just rendered utterly irrelevant at that point. Because if you say, oh, we're going to try for the European spaces, but we're going to try and purposely go out in the qualifiers because we don't actually want to play those games. That's where it becomes pointless. The clubs like Burnley, thinking about, you know, the reputation you get with that, the establishing yourselves, the fans, and how big that's going to be for them. They're not thinking about those other kinds of things.
Mm. Well, it's a big relegation 6 points for United next week.
Fulham beat Burnley at the weekend 4-2. There was some excellent individual displays. Seri scored a fantastic goal. Mitrovic and Schürrle looked great in the Fulham attack. Do you think Fulham will be involved in the relegation battle, or do you think they'll be safe? I mean, on paper, their side does look very good.
See, I do think they're going to be involved in the relegation battle. And that comes to the fact I think they're going to be horrendously inconsistent this season. I think that's going to be the thing they're really going to struggle for. I think they'll be a bit like Palace in the seasons when they go down. You know, they do it every so often, where they play some games and you go, oh my God, they're amazing. They could be competing for Europe next year. And then they lose 3 on the trot where they concede the most stupid goals. I think that's going to be Fulham all over this year. I think you just need enough of the good games to work it out. But if you end up going on a really bad run, that can knock for confidence to go and have those good games. Yeah. So they lost their first two games. And the thing is, if they had lost one or two more, everyone would be saying, oh, God, yeah, they're probably nailed on for one of the going down spots now. Because they've got a win, because they got it in good fashion, it's like, oh, okay, the confidence is lifted again. But, you know, again, you know, next week they could lose again. I think they'll struggle for consistency, which is where I think teams like Wolves are going to be fine, because I think they'll be fine for that level of consistency. Mm.
Yeah, I think they'll be alright, because I think they'll win enough games of those 1-3 to keep up. I think they'll get enough points from that rather than drawing a lot of games. That lack of consistency just to get the one win in every three will get past 38.
I do hope they stay up. They do play some good football. I do like watching them so far.
Yeah, the concern will be whether they're almost too naive at times, like whether they, because they're sticking with the, because they do play some brilliant football, even in the Championship when we were playing them, they're great to watch, but I feel like they're gonna have a lot of games where they on paper are the better team and they create more chances and they pass the ball more and all of this kind of stuff, but they just get beaten out by a good defence. Mm-hmm. I think like, even though Mitrovic and Schürrle have started really well, like Schürrle looked absolutely amazing on the weekend. But I think it is going to come down. Mainly, I think they'll be in the mixer, because I just think everyone is going to be. I think all of the bottom eight are all going to, it's all going to be 3 points in it at the end of the season, I think, same as last year. But yeah, I'd like them to stay up for the same reasons as Shane said, because they play good football and they've got some good players. But it's a long way to go. I don't think it's almost too early to say at this point. But
did Sessegnon have a knock at the weekend?
He was on the bench.
He just wasn't picked. It was Schürrle and Vietto picked on the wings instead. They've got quite a lot of options in attack, though, which was going to be my next point, which I think will put them in very good stead for the season. And also, yeah. Seri in midfield is a great talent, and it was an excellent goal for him at the weekend.
You just know within 2 years a big club will have snapped him up. He is one of those ones, a bit like the ones we sign when we get players like Van Dijk, and we just know straight away, yeah, we're not keeping hold of them for very long. They're a lot better than our level. I mean, they've got a few of those ones for them.
Yeah, it reminded me of when Neves signed for Wolves, like when it was one of these players who are like, for the last 2-3 years has been linked with Champions League level clubs, and then for whatever reason, somehow Fulham managed to sign him. I just don't know how. I think that's just an incredible signing. That could go down as signing of the season if they stay up.
Yeah.
When you're a fan of these clubs and you make one of these signings, it's amazing, but at the same time, you know, you can't get too attached. There is no way in hell, unless your team massively improves, you're ever keeping hold of them for any length of time.
Where do you think Wolves will finish this season? They've been tipped maybe to get into the Europa League or something like that. It was an excellent display against Manchester City. We've seen teams, you know, get points or whatever off them, but I think Wolves were the first team we saw, you know, apart from maybe Liverpool, to properly go toe to toe with them and you know, nearly got a win out of it. I thought Wolves were absolutely outstanding.
See, people say that. You know, and they were good against City. They did play well. But you also look at it and you think, why are people saying they're going to do so well? I think people are reading too much on paper. They've not actually won a game yet. Everyone thinking about, oh, yeah, all the good football they played and, you know, all the good goals and these kinds of things. Still haven't won a game. How long do you actually leave out before you say, actually, maybe it's not all so rosy? I do think they'll be fine, Wolves. But I think if they finish 14th, they should consider that like an achievement for the year. Stay up. That should be their only aim, because as good as that team is on paper, we've seen better teams go down because they thought they were too good for it, because they thought they should have been going for something else. It's a good team, but they've got to actually start winning some games before anyone can talk anything like that.
Yeah, I agree with Shane. I was going to go for 12th, 13th, 14th if they get a bit lucky. But I also think that they're, because of like Mendes being in the club or whatever, they're going to have a massive January, basically wherever they're at. If they're in the middle of the table come January, they're going to be able to attract the kind of players that you'd expect they continue to do. And if they're going to be in the relegation zone, then Mendes is just going to click his fingers and sign three worldies. So I think January will be massive for them, but I do think they'll be fine. I don't think Europe. I think Europe's getting a bit carried away, but I think they'll be fine mid table. Mm-hmm.
You've got to think,
Richard, go. Earlier about Burnley, that they're too good of a side to go down. And I know in the past, Newcastle went down 1 year where they were fairly decent. Same with West Ham. But you look around the league and, you know, Huddersfield were a worse side, Newcastle were a worse side, Cardiff worse. Sorry to say, Brighton are.
Southampton are.
Yeah, Southampton, Watford in fourth place. All of these are, on paper, worse teams than both Wolves and Fulham.
Yeah, but on paper, West Ham are a good side, on paper, but they're the only side in the division without any points.
Well, West Ham are a good side on paper, but they're ran by absolute fools.
Yeah, that never really helps. To be honest, this is, I hate to sound like, I hate to sound a bit like Mourinho, and I can actually kind of very much understand what he was saying when he was making this point. You've got to look at the narrative sometimes. The whole narrative about Wolves is, look at the money, look at the players they're signing. Oh, aren't they playing such good progressive football? Look at Cardiff, they're going to go down. They're playing terrible football. They're managed by an idiot, and their whole club is just idiots from the bottom up. And they've got the same exact points as Wolves have got. After three games in the season, that's the difference in narratives. Watford, we spoke about them earlier, we won three games out of three, 9 points, level on points with people in the lead of the league. What did we say? Are they going to go down? That was what we said. That was the narrative. Are they going to go down? It wasn't, look how well they're doing. Can they compete for Europe? Is that realistic? If it was Wolves with three wins out of three, we'd be saying, oh, are they going to compete for Europe? Oh, they really might look like doing it. That's the importance of the narrative. Because right now the whole Wolves narrative is so positive. Give it five more games and they're sitting there only on what, 8 or 9 points, very possible, by the way, and suddenly that narrative is going to start to really shift badly. It's going to be, oh, this is a club poorly run, ambitions well beyond their actual capacity. This is what happens when you run a club that's a small club with all these big blah 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 blah. Watch the narrative quickly changes if things don't go well.
What we were saying about Leicester when they were top of the league, they should be safe from relegation. We didn't say anything about them potentially getting into Europe or even, you know, winning the thing. So, I do want to say about Wolves, though, that they, you can say, yeah, they've not won a game yet, but their games, two of their three games against Everton and against Manchester City, they've played really good football, and there's a clear... they're going to be able to compete with some of the big sides. As Vincent Kompany said after the game, he has confidence that Wolves will take points off the other sides in the top six. And I think they will. I think they'll get more points against, you know, your Spurs, your Liverpool, your Chelsea, whoever.
The thing is, though, I actually don't think those are the valuable points. They're like extra points. The valuable points are getting wins against the teams below you.
Yeah.
Because those are the six-pointers. And yeah, I would take any day a win against the team one space below me than a win against the top six, any day. It's way more important ultimately. And if that's the problem, is if they start losing to, because they have had a hard start, I think, with Everton and City in particular. But I think if they start losing at any point to the teams below them, this applies to anyone really, but then that would be the time to start ringing the alarm bells.
Mm-hmm. Do you want a really, really good comparison? Southampton, when we came back up to the Prem, we were bleeding points from the bigger teams. Nigel Adkins had us, I remember, what was it, we beat Chelsea 3-2. It was a really, really good victory. I think on the opening day we had Man City and we lost 3-2 so narrowly. So we got points from the bigger teams. And we sacked Adkins before the end of the season because we nearly went down. We weren't doing the same thing against the smaller clubs. Now, we managed to be okay in the end and stabilise, and we did quite well after that point. But I can see Wolves having a similar thing. As I said, I think they'll be fine this season. I think they've got good enough players and they play good enough football to stay up. But this whole approach of, oh, it's Mendes is involved and look at these amazing Portuguese players, I think people have got well too far ahead of themselves. This is a club a bit like what we were when we first came up. Definitely on the up and up, but you're going to need to give it a few years.
We've sort of danced around it a bit, but Southampton, Shane, what are your thoughts on them so far? And I know they lost at the weekend with a red card for Højbjerg. Deserved? I'm presuming you're not going to argue with that.
It was deserved. Leicester of Law, it was deserved. And if it was any other team against us, I would have said, yeah, it's deserved. The only thing that gripes me about it is those decisions aren't given consistently.
Yeah.
So Højbjerg went down. He went down way too easily. I wouldn't say it was quite a dive, but it was his whole appealing for afterwards that then made it a dive. But you see those things all the time. Players go down in the box, they start appealing, ref just waves it away and says, no, nothing. He doesn't do anything with it because he's too afraid to say, oh, you dive there, I've got to give you a booking. So he just says, oh, no, it's just contact. That's fine. There's nothing really there. So it annoys me there aren't consistency in those decisions. That's probably the only thing apart from that. Yeah, he did deserve to get sent off. I think Southampton, the very worrying thing isn't that we look terrible, it's that we look exactly like we did last season. we're going into games and we can get the odd goal here or there, and we can look defensively okay for most of the games, we can play some decent football, then we concede. And then that team just goes scatterbrained and has no idea what to do. We're a bit like Man U at the moment. Concede one goal and we suddenly think to ourselves, oh God, we're going to concede three more. We just panic and we go into that mode and we stay in the mode and we don't know how to get ourselves out of it. So, okay, if you're going up against Burnley and they are struggling to score against you too, and we can take those games 0-0 all we want. We can get those draws there, or if we can get a goal first and then we can see, well, maybe if there's not too long left, we can maybe see out for a draw. That's what happened last season. We got way too many draws, and I can see that defensive fragility again. Mark Hughes is just changing the team every single week. It's like Claude Puel all over again, where we have no idea who the hell we're actually playing, what our best approach is, what our best system is. I'm quite worried for this season. I sort of said at the start of the season, I thought we could kind of do anything from finishing maybe eighth or something like that, straight down to getting relegated bottom of the league. I said, I think we were even finishing 19th or, you know, maybe happily mid-table. The way things are going, I think it's not looking good at all. And the thing that worries me is if we got rid of Hughes, which realistically I'd say he's probably got 2 months to turn this around and then he's gone. But I don't know who the hell we'd get in who's any better. Well, I think we just have to really think, cross fingers.
Mourinho.
Well, I checked the email earlier because I was curious what it was for Mourinho to get sacked next, and I did notice Mark Hughes was second favourite to be the next manager to go. In terms of signings, though, there wasn't a lot coming in. Danny Ings came in. There were Angus Gunn, a goalkeeper, and a few other minor sort of signings, but not enough coming in, maybe?
It was actually our busiest transfer window, I think, ever.
Huh?
So, yeah, no, it was actually, we broke our transfer record. It was one of our biggest transfer windows in our history.
Are you talking about the outgoings?
In. Coming in. No, no, no.
Really?
We signed Yannick Vestergaard, Stuart Armstrong, Mohamed Elianoussi, Angus Gunn. Who's the other one? Danny Ings, of course. Who else did we get in?
I've got a list in front of me and you've named them all.
Yeah, no, I think that is all of them. And, yeah, that's I think, our biggest transfer window ever.
Okay, is that a good enough transfer window if it's your biggest ever?
That's a confident sigh, that is.
What that is if we had signed these exact same players a couple of years ago when we were on the up and up and we were in the ascendancy, I'd have said yes. And I think those players would have gone on to impress. Elianoussi, Vestergaard, Gunn, Armstrong, I think they're all good players. I think they're all players who could go on to do good things. But at the moment, our club, it's for confidence, it's for tactics, it's this. We're almost in that Sunderland state where every year, you know, it's not going to get any better. Maybe you hold it off for another year going down, maybe you hold it off for another year. We seem to be in that mentality where we're waiting for one new manager to come in and one manager to go out. That is such a dangerous place to be in. We need to go back to what we were doing before. One manager, stick with him, say, right, we need to build the team identity here. We need to do all the old stuff we were doing so well that was separating us from all the other clubs who should have been going down too. We need to go back to doing that, because right now we're not as bad as like what Sunderland were when they started to go down. Them for several years when they started to go down, but I think we are actually going in that way.
Okay,
we are not being run well at the moment.
Can I get a neutral opinion on Southampton? Go on, Hero.
I think Southampton have become like the new Aston Villa. That they had a few decent players, they all sort of went, and now they're just sort of men. Apart from Shane, who's a Southampton fan, who looks out for the Southampton result on a Saturday anymore?
We used to be everyone's second team, didn't we? That was the joke, you know. Everyone used to support Southampton.
But now they're just sort of the beige team of the league.
Mm. No, I agree.
Nobody had missed them if they dropped out.
Yeah, we used to be everyone's second favourite team because we played really good football, and this was at a time when not everyone played really good football, and we were one of the only clubs bringing through the English talent. What are we doing at the moment? I almost feel like I'm going back to that Mourinho point again, where it's like, what are we doing this all for? Not bringing through the younger players, don't have a real identity, not even winning games, so we can't turn around and be like, oh, at least we're staying up and we're doing okay. I don't really know what we're doing as a club, and that's been a problem now, I think, since probably we put in Claude Puel in charge. The second, Ronald Koeman was the real start of, we're going to change from this whole progressive values thing into being a club that's all about in the moment, in the now, because we've got into Europe, so it's now let's see if we can make the most of it. Second we did that, everything started going backwards. I think now, even though Koeman gave us our best Premier League finish, all those things, in hindsight, that whole transition was a big mistake. That we lost everything that we were building up. We should have realised that what we were building up was the narrative. that was what was making us successful. We weren't becoming a team that was getting more and more success and then we were going to go and capitalise on it. We were all about that journey. That was the big thing. We went from a League One club straight up to that. But second, we decided to say we're something else. We're a team that's going to try and win, you know, win Europa Leagues and Cups and all of that. We're going to be about success in the now. That was when we lost all of that. That was when the players as well, if you look at the timeline of it, the players started to lose interest too. Because all of a sudden, if you're being told, right, you're going to be a club in the now, you're going to be a club that's trying to win things now, go to a club where you're actually going to win. Go to a big club where you're actually going to win.
Why, for most of your players.
Yeah, why would you stick around at that point? Take it, play the odds. Go and move on somewhere where it's more likely. So we lost the whole, and it was what we actually called it, the Southampton way. We lost that completely, and it's all going backwards from now. And I see no signs from the board, from our directors, from anyone like that, that anything's about to change. I actually sent a complaining email to Les Reed once. I actually got a response from him. It's a fairly good response, but it showed me a level of delusion that they have no idea what the actual problem is. And it goes to show that I think they think everything's okay. They think they're doing the things that they were doing before, but they don't realize they've become so detached from it, they've become too close to it, that it's starting to cause a big problem. And that is the same story with every club this happens to, isn't it? It's exactly the same story, and it breaks my heart that I can just watch it happening, knowing that within 2-3 years we're down again.
That's very damning, Shane. That's very damning.
Yeah, I feel a bit sad after that.
Funny enough, we've just kicked off in the cup together as well, right in Southampton.
Yeah. Tell you what, you say that's very sad. How do you think it makes me feel?
That's true. I agree with you, though. There does seem to have been a point where everything all of a sudden started to get really negative. Especially towards the end with Puel, even though you finished in the top half and got to a cup final, nobody was really that happy. It seemed like everyone was a little bit upset with the football and didn't see as much of the youth players coming through. It wasn't as exciting, whatever. And I think Gabbiadini helped a lot that season in terms of scoring those a stupid amount of goals. Because I think if that hadn't happened, you probably wouldn't have done as well as you did. But it just seemed like you've abandoned some of the things that made you such a good team to watch, like bringing through the young English players. Like there's none, even in your team today in the cup against us, like Jack Stevens is the only one.
And he's Plymouth as well.
Yeah, exactly. So it does seem like you used to go for these really exciting foreign coaches, like even if Koeman didn't play the best football in the world, like people like Poch and all this kind of stuff. And now you've gone for probably the one of the plainest managers in the Premier League with Mark Hughes.
You want to talk about how far we've devolved. When Pochettino was manager, we were talking about James Ward-Prowse as being the future captain of Southampton, the next one club player, that kind of thing. Transfer window, we almost sold him to Watford for 15 million. That's how far backwards we've gone. And he should have progressed far more than he has. Yes, you can put that a little bit down to the player, but his attitude's actually kind of perfect. So I don't really put it too much down to him. I put it down to how we've had managers who have been looking for success right now, not developing players. That's all gone backwards from that point. So that for me, when I saw that in the transfer window, when I saw that was maybe happening, that was my moment of just going, oh, I give up with this. The way we're being run, give up with that, because we have no idea anymore.
Claude Puel's doing a good job with Leicester, though, isn't he? After the Man United defeat, they've won the two games since. Before the season started, I did some Premier League predictions, which are on the B2 Sport website, and I put Leicester to finish highest outside of the top six. I don't know what you guys think of them.
I think Claude Puel won't be there next season.
Oh.
The problem with Claude Puel is he does okay, and everyone hates him because it's the most boring football you've ever watched in your entire life, and he makes the most ridiculous decisions in games, like substituting players who've scored two goals at 45 minutes, or he decides, right, for next game we just won 4-0, so let's go and change the entire team and change our tactics. And as a fan, you just end up being all over the place. I know Leicester fans, they all hate Puel. They all think he's a moron. They can't understand how he's actually still manager. The players clearly don't really like him that much either, and that's the exact thing that happened at Southampton. I think he'll be gone by the end of the year pretty much no matter what he does.
I think Shane's touched on a really interesting point there, because when we're always talking about, it's one of the things I try to explain to people who don't support a big club, which is just how important it is to find something else in your season to enjoy than just staying up. And that is really what Leicester is these days. Like, maybe it's a push for Europe, but realistically the top teams are going to be pretty much impenetrable a lot of the time, and they're going to have to do something special again to get anywhere higher than that. But but you have to look for something else to enjoy. And it can be the football. It can be entertaining if you're playing like with Fulham play. Like that's one of the things that I think is going to fare them well. Is even if they are losing, they might panic a bit, but at least people are going to have fun watching their team. Whereas, and you know, Burnley, like, even though some of the football hasn't been incredible to watch, the fans see 100% commitment from every single player, every single game. And even when they lose, they can say, we gave our all and that's it. Whereas with, like you just said with Puel, there's things to get frustrated about. There's things to get annoyed, like you say, making those changes and not getting the best out of some players and sort of defensive minded football, which they don't need to play, really, because they have a good enough team to not play like that. So I think that's a big part of it, is having to look for things to enjoy more than that. And if they can't find anything, then I agree with Shane. He probably won't be around for longer than the year.
Do you not think Leicester's football's been a bit better this season, though? I think they've played some good stuff myself.
It's Claude Puel, and anyone who knows him as a manager knows it doesn't last. They have those little bursts where he gets a bit of criticism and goes, all right, let's free up a little bit. And then he loses a game, and he goes exactly back to what he did before. You know it won't last. And I think when you're a manager who starts to get a reputation like that, you can't win the fans back. You can be Tony Pulis and you can start the team playing incredible football. Sam Allardyce, everyone forgets Sam Allardyce, the last couple of years of football management he was into, his teams weren't playing hoofball. They were playing better football, but it was Sam Allardyce. He had a reputation, so everyone just assumed it was. Even the fans watching him, they almost dismissed what they were actually seeing. They started to make the assumptions because when he started there, they did play hoofball. After a certain point, you can't win the fans back because they know deep down this is temporary. Whenever things get difficult or if there's any situation where it's not working, they're going to revert to type, these managers. And Claude Puel is exactly that kind of manager.
I still think they'll finish top 10. But it's just not likeable.
He does look like a goblin.
He's like a foreign Neil Warnock.
I think that's offensive to Neil Warnock.
I want to mention Brighton as well. Beating United 3-2, a great result, and then a narrow loss.
I think we're going to stay up pretty comfortably, and I hate being that confident because it means you have the potential to be really, really disappointed. But we got all the things we've been talking about with a lot of the other clubs is you can point at problems and things like at Leicester, people are saying about Claude Puel, whether or not they're obviously not going to be competing for relegation, so that's different. But and you can talk about Huddersfield just not quite having the players, West Ham, there just seems to be something completely wrong with that club. Same with Newcastle. There's none of that at Brighton. At all. Everyone's so confident that Board has done everything perfectly in the last, frankly, 5-6 years. We've signed a good amount of players who haven't even been integrated into the team yet even against the win against United and against Liverpool. So I think there's a lot to be positive about if you're a Brighton fan. And it's just, I think it would take some seriously bad luck for us not to stay up. We've got a load of faith in Chris Hughton, and I'm feeling really positive about the season. So, I'm in like the opposite boat to Shane, really.
I agree about Brighton. I think they'll be just fine. I think Chris Hughton is one of the most underrated managers in the country. You look at how consistently he's done well with clubs. It's absurd. And I think they've made good signings again. They're a club that have clearly got an air of positivity about them as well. So it's not like they're in a position where they're thinking, oh, maybe this will be the year we go down. It's almost like even if we do go down, well, we've been to the Premier League for the first time. There's this sort of endless optimism about Brighton, and that feeds through to the players, that feeds through to the management, and that motivates you to win more games. I think they'll probably finish mid-table. I don't think they'll even be that close to it. I think it'll be a fair few points. I wouldn't be surprised if they were, in that sort of same area we put Wolves in. 14th,
13th, 12th. Yeah, I think that would represent really good progress for us as well. The first target will obviously still be staying up. But the good point about Chris Hughton is I feel like in the past he's pretty much been the sort of ideal person to put as the victim of the sort of sacking culture, where he got sacked with Norwich when they were like 15th or something, relegated that season. And like, if you talk to Newcastle fans, they really liked him. They don't really understand why he ever got sacked. And you can look at it now and see that the board's a bit insane, and that's probably why. But the thing is with us is I really don't think we would ever sack him. Yeah. I think he could genuinely be our manager for the next decade. Because even if we went down, I think we'd still stick with him. Because he's so calm. He fits the philosophy of the club really well, where it's quite pragmatic, but he's introducing a lot of pressing and things like that. He's trying to make us a better team, which, like, in terms of football as well as just winning games, which we were for the first half of last season. But we've got a lot better with passing. We've got a lot better with pressing, as people saw against United and to an extent against Liverpool. And it is all just really positive. And I'm hoping I've not changed my tune in 10 games' time.
There's quite a few managers like that who you think might be there for the long time. You look at Wagner at Huddersfield as well, at Eddie Howe, at Sean Dyche. I think there's quite a few managers who look like, yeah, they could be there for 10 years or so, which is good for the game, I think.
Yeah, and it's not a surprise. You look at football, things always come, they're always cyclical. Everyone gets used to things being a certain way and then it changes again. Yeah, fans, boards, players, they're probably getting a bit tired of having a manager change every 2 years. Because, I mean, on average, that's about how long a manager stays now, isn't it? It's just under 2 years that the average manager stays. Eventually, there's going to be a turnaround where they go, actually, maybe we should try the other thing. Maybe we should try keeping some people around. I think Burnley probably started that off by saying, right, we've gone down, but we're sticking with this. We know this will be all right. We know this is going to turn out fine. So I think they're the ones who really, in the modern Premier League era, really set the stone for that. Also want to say, Harry, you sound a bit like I did 4 or 5 years ago, and I sincerely hope it all goes to shit for you lot too.
we'll be fine, mate. I'm confident.
Come back to me in 4 years when you got Mark Hughes.
or when we start selling our players to Liverpool. But that's one of the things that's going to be really interesting to see, because that's one of the concerns that I could maybe have going into the future. Because we, over the last sort of 3-4 years when we've been flirting with promotion and championship, we were unbelievably resilient at keeping hold of our players. Like Dale Stevens and Lewis Dunk, there were two times a couple of seasons ago when we thought they were gone, nailed on left. Dale nearly went to Burnley. I think Dunk nearly went to West Brom when they were still in the Prem or something like that. And we held on to them really confidently, really calmly. And it's just a question of if we can do that if somebody like Everton came in for gross or something like that. So that's sort of, I feel like, the next big challenge is proving that we might be a better club for some kinds of players than an Everton or something like that. But we'll have to see. I think it was interesting. I think we were talking about the longest turning managers and Eddie Howe and all of that lot up there. I think Chris Hughton is 6th or 7th. Isn't that insane that he's only been around for about, I think this is just 4.5 years, and he's 6th or 7th in terms of longest serving managers in the Premier League. I just find that absolutely insane.
Isn't it longest serving managers in the country? I was going to say, the top four divisions.
It wouldn't be far off in the Football League. There aren't many long serving managers. Like Tisdale was at Exeter for ages and he's gone. And yeah, there's not many in the Football League now.
It's the way football goes. It's like people, if you tried to say to people like, what, 2 or 3 years ago, everyone would be playing 5 in the back. We'd be going, hang on a second, no, everyone's doing 4-2-3-1. That's how it's going to stay. A few years before that, it's 4-3-3. Everything's 4-3-3. A few years before that, everything's 4-4-2. Why would it not be 4-4-2? These things change. And you go, like, again, 10 years back, even a bit longer, and people are saying, oh, the average length of a manager is going to be just under 2 years. And we go, that's ridiculous. How can any team build something for longer than 2 years? That's ridiculous. These things come around, and it's going to come back around to the point where people are getting to more traditional, I think, football values. I think there's a clear turn towards those kind of things. I think people are a bit fed up with how the modern game is, especially for fans when they're paying through the roof for absolutely everything. I think they're starting to turn. I think the clubs are starting to realise that.
Okay.
Chris Hughton is 10th, and that means he's 5th in the Premier League in terms of longest serving managers, which is absolutely, and that's 3 years, about 3.5 years. Mm. And all of the, that's what's interesting. The only top 6 club that are in this is Pochettino with Spurs. That's 4 years. Mm. Everybody else is Sean Dyche, Eddie Howe. That's literally the only other two clubs. It's fourth in the Prem on longest serving manager. It's insane.
Just two other quick things I just want to mention before we finish the show. First of all, Hero, you got the poll on Twitter. Have you got the results or?
No, was I meant to?
Oh, all right, no worries. I've got the results. I'll edit this out one sec. all right, at Hero, hang on, let me say that again. So just a couple of things before we finish the show. Firstly, at Hero's request, we put a poll on Twitter following Mourinho's breakdown. We asked what the funniest managerial breakdown was in an interview. The options being Ron Atkinson, Rafael Benitez, Kevin Keegan, or Jose Mourinho. What would you guys have voted for?
Benitez, hands down, mate. Benitez. It's so quotable, man. It's so quotable.
Keegan's not quotable. Keegan, yeah, but... come on, that is the quote.
Love it.
Yeah, but...
love it.
I lost count of how many times I've paraphrased that quote. Kevin Keegan's is the breakdown.
Benitez's is him trying to give off the impression that he's like calm about it, and he's just like, "Oh, I'm just talking about facts. All of this, I'm just saying all this." And really, you can see that he's seething, like he's absolutely livid. It's my favourite one, man. I voted for that.
I agree with you, Hero. Who do you think?
Oh, Keegan, without a doubt. Was the first proper time that Ferguson just destroyed someone.
Well, the majority agree with you, Shane and Hero. 59% said Kevin Keegan.
Thank you, General. Thank you, General Public.
Well, it's our Twitter following. 24% Mourinho, 12% Ron Atkinson, and only 6% Benitez, which I'm not very happy with, to be honest. I think he deserved more, and that's a fact.
You were one step ahead of me. I was just about to do that.
It's because Louis van Gaal did the same exact thing. It just made it less special.
I have quoted facts so many times myself. And also, I just want to wish England well on Friday. They play Wales in a big game. They need to go win in Newport in order to qualify for the World Cup. So hopefully they can win that. England v Wales, the women's, isn't it? It's the World Cup.
Oh, for God's sakes!
Beforehand,
England v women's. Come on,
it's big
no
game,
one cares.
That's a spicy way to end the podcast.
Oh, only the BBC cares.
Hey, I care.
No, you don't. You just like to think you do. Fuck women's football.
All right, well, thanks for listening to the show. You can check us out at our website, v2football.com, and also follow us on Twitter at V2 Sport Network. It's good night from me, and good night from everyone else.
Night, guys.